rest of their life.
My friend Robin had this really good phrase that she tells me when I, like, feel bad after a fight or, you know, didn't do as well as I wanted to. And she says, feeling bad never made anyone feel good. And what's kind of funny about that to me, what this question is that there is a weird comfort to feeling bad. There's a weird comfort to the pathways in your brain that are already self-critical or self-doubting or any of these things that you think these things about yourself, like, oh my God, I'm so crap, I'm not fast enough, whatever. That doesn't make you feel good, but we keep thinking them out of laziness or out of comfort or out of whatever those pathways are that we automatically think that way. So how do you push yourself out of those automatic pathways in order to build the new pathways that make you more automatically, that's okay, I'll get it next time, just start from now, or positivity?
Well, if you think of the neural network within your brain, the neurons and how they connect, the more frequently you think something, the faster and faster those neurons are firing, and the bigger and bigger they become. So if you think of the automatic thought that, you know, I'm not fast enough, if you think that often enough, it's going to make a super freeway of neurons in your brain moving very, very quickly. Now, if you want to build that second path and you want to say, no, I'm actually going to tell myself I'm getting better, but I want to make that the thing that I'm thinking more frequently, well, you have to think about it in terms of, again, building that network. So I like to kind of think of it as an analogy of walking across a field, and you've got this quad that's grass, it's lush, it's beautiful. If you walk across that field time and time and time again, eventually you wear a path. And so the path looks like the right way to go. It looks like the most efficient way to go. It looks like where everybody else goes. And so you continue to use it. But similar to the quad, if I want to go a different way, if I want to take a different route, well, if I start walking on a different piece of the grass, the other grass in the other path doesn't grow back immediately. It takes time to leave it alone, to not approach it, and to let it grow back over a large period of time and eventually wear away a new path. And I like thinking about it from that perspective, because it generally takes about as long as it would take to regrow grass.
Yeah.
So it'll take months, you know, and I think that really kind of focusing on those things and trying to change those. I liked what you said in the beginning, though, in that, you know, sometimes it's good to have these negative thoughts, because the negative thoughts aren't empowering, but they let you know what you're learning and what you need to get. I have visuals for performance, and when they're, you know, things it's fantastic. Oh, and so that you are saying, hey, this is something that's going to be in order
right.
to get better. So I think sometimes the negative things, they're necessary.
Well, there's another question, is that there are people who are motivated by negative thoughts. I think maybe even women in particular, like body hatred or whatever, will get your ass to the gym and you'll work hard in this kind of like punishing way. But that's not a healthy way to, you know, you can motivate yourself this far, but you can't actually succeed as an athlete with that kind of motivator alone.
Yeah, I think.
So where does that end, and then your different thoughts begin?
Well, if we were to get into motivation, we would basically look at intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And the extrinsic motivation can be as simple as, you know, I get a reward for it, or because, you know, I'll avoid getting punished if I don't do it. It can also be guilt. I'm going to do this because I would feel guilty if I didn't do it, even though I don't want to do it. That will, like you said, it'll only get you so far. And then you look at the intrinsic motivation, coming back to what we talked about before, and why are you involved in this sport? Why are you doing it? It's the passion. It's the thing that drives you to do it because you like it, for whatever reasons those are. And sometimes we lose intrinsic motivation and we rely on the extrinsic motivation to get us through those humps. But ultimately, you want to get back to that intrinsic motivation, and it's looking at the things that just make you so happy and satisfied to be performing in these ways. When you lose touch of that for an extended period of time, a lot of times that's when I'm working with somebody who's getting ready to get out of whatever it is they're performing. Mm. They're just done. They're not having fun anymore. The extrinsic motivators are just not enough to keep them where they want to be.
Right.
And so I think that's a very broad topic.
Mm. Going back to your example of walking through the field with the quad and cutting a new pathway, it sounds as though because you're saying that the more you say something, the faster that avenue is going to be, you don't necessarily have to believe the positive things you're saying to yourself. You just have to keep saying them until you believe them. Right?
No, not necessarily. you definitely have to find something that you can, that you have to believe in. As an example, I was working with somebody, and his kind of statement was that I'm, you know, we could turn it to anything, but his specific statement was, I'm a stupid person. And so it's a very negative thing, and he's worn this path in the grass over and over, telling himself he's a stupid person. And so if he were just to tell himself, I'm a smart person all day, well, that wouldn't wear a new part in the field because he doesn't believe it. It would basically be telling himself a lie all day. So with him, I worked on a grammar lesson, and I just said, okay, so let's look at the noun in the sentence, I am a stupid person. We have the subject, the I, and then we have the second noun, which is person. And I said, well, what's the adjective? And it's either stupid or smart. And I asked him, what happens if you just get rid of the adjective altogether? Well, we have I am a person. And now I asked him, can you believe that? Well, certainly. He was a person. He is a person. And so you have good things that you're good at, things that you're smart at, things you're not so smart at, just like any person. Using that as a statement is one step up from saying you're a stupid person.
Right.
It's not necessarily going to make him jump for joy that he is a person, but it's going to make him feel a whole lot better than saying he's a stupid person. So trying to build that new kind of network in your brain, it has to be something you believe, and it won't necessarily be exactly the opposite of what you were thinking before.
Right.
Eventually, it will get to something that's very positive. Eventually, that person did feel smart in certain areas, mm-hmm. and they were able to tell themselves that. But I think that, you know, telling yourselves lies all day or BSing yourself all day is not going to lead you to success.
Nice. All right, so I'm going to ask you a few questions that I got from people on my Facebook page. And one that I actually got multiple times was about fear. And how do you use uh-huh. fear to your advantage? And then how do you flow through it? Like, those, I assume, are two different approaches, but... But what are the ways that you can use your anxiety, I guess, if it's not necessarily fear or fear of getting hurt or being bested or something?
Yeah, that would I could probably, you know, really write an entire book about this. But to dumb it down, make it very simple and sweet, I think that you look at fear and you see it as a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me?
Sorry, no, keep going.
So I think if you look at fear, it's a motivator because it instinctually brings out the fight or flight. It's, are we going to fight through what's going on or are we going to flee from it? And then, of course, there's the third one, which is freeze, where you just can't do anything. I think to work through fear and work through those things, you have to approach it knowing that you're going to be afraid, but using that fear as a motivator, as something that tells you, I need to get better in order to overcome this. Now, if we look at it in caveman days, it was quite simple. You were afraid because you were going to die because the tiger was running at you. And it's either I'm going to fight the tiger and trying to get it not to kill me, or I'm going to try and flee and try and outlast it or whatever. And I think that that made it simple, whereas in today's day and age, we're looking at it from a different perspective because the fear is a lot of times something we create within ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's something that we make bigger than it actually is. And when we have to face that fear, when we've created it ourselves, it seems unsurmountable. It seems like something that's just monstrous. And so I think kind of approaching it and telling yourself, okay, this is a fear and I'm acknowledging the fear. I'm accepting that I am afraid and I'm going to look at it in terms of something that's going to make me better. And I'm going to use that fear, manipulate that fear and change that fear into making myself more powerful and more capable of confronting this and kind of putting myself out on a limb and ultimately making myself a better person and a better performer as a result of the fear.
Mm. And how would you link that to pain, like people who are afraid of pain or people who are experiencing pain or injury and the benefits, like what you can learn from pain versus when you need to back off and have the lesson be, don't do that?
I think, you know, if you look at the gate control theory of pain, the gate control theory of pain basically says that you've got a gate with the pain and you can either open that gate up and feel more pain or you can close that gate off by doing certain things that close that pain off. Mm-hmm. And I think that looking at it from that perspective, basically it's the more attention I pay to the pain, the more I think about the pain, the more I think about how the pain will limit me or how the pain will cause me to suffer, that's going to open up the gate. Mm-hmm. The more I concentrate on, okay, I'm in pain here, but what are the things I can do? What are things I can do to distract myself? What are things that I can do to push through it? Those are all things that will close the gate and make it a lot more tolerable. Pain is very interesting because it's very subjective. You can have two people have the same injury, you know, and you know, really cut down all of the variables. I'm going to drop a 5-pound weight on both of your feet at exactly the same time from the exactly same height, and you will experience the pain profoundly different just because of who you are and how you experience mm-hmm. pain. And so I think looking at it from that perspective, because it's so subjective, it's a very personal thing. Knowing yourself, knowing your body, and knowing your own threshold for pain are all things that are intimate to you, and they're things that only you will be able to work through in terms of what you're willing and not willing to put up with. And sometimes you learn very, very hard lessons having to learn that through the pain, and sometimes you learn lessons that tell you you're a lot tougher than you think you are. And the brain ultimately is going to tell you you're in more pain than you are in. The body will push itself through so much more than the brain would want it to allow itself to do. Because the brain essentially is lazy and it doesn't want to be hurt and it just wants to be satisfied. Whereas the body says, I'm going to do what it takes to survive. And that's going to be a lot.
That's interesting because you actually have to use your brain to push past that and make your body keep going. So it's both your handicap and the thing that you use to continue on, yeah?
Very well said.
It's interesting that both with the issues of pain and with fear, from my own experience, accepting and acknowledging that it's going to happen makes it a lot easier to deal with. It's like if you're watching a scary movie and you don't know where the zombie is or something, but you know there's a zombie in the scene, you're kind of calmer because you're waiting for it. So you're like, it's going to be somewhere. Whereas if you don't know like what the monster is or where it is or if it's going to be in this scene, the suspense is what makes it so scary. So I feel like for me personally, when I know I'm going to get kicked, I know I'm going to get hit in the face, I know it's going to hurt, it's like, okay, I know that's going to happen at some point in this 2-minute round. I accept that it's going to happen. Whereas if you're like, maybe I won't get kicked, like maybe I won't get hit, you're screwed. Like you're going to be completely like taken aback by, you know, it's the punching game. So what's going to happen?
Very true.
So someone asked about something that my friend Emma calls small guy syndrome, which basically means that you are always at the size disadvantage at your gym or in training or sparring or whatever your sport is. You simply will never have the size advantage. And how do you deal with something that feels like an unfair disadvantage that you kind of can't ever change? Like, how do you mentally deal with a permanent disadvantage?
I think that looking at it as a disadvantage is your number one problem there. I think you can look at it in terms of an advantage as well, because somebody will underestimate mm-hmm. you in so many different ways when they're looking and measuring with their eyes rather than really feeling what it is to fight an opponent like that. And it's interesting, too, if you read I'm trying to remember the author. He wrote a book called David and Goliath, and basically he talks about how Goliath was the one who was the underdog big time. And he kind of discusses how Goliath was wearing all this armor. He was weighed down. He was, you know, looking to have a fight against somebody who was going to come up and fight him on his own turf, on his own terms, basically walk up and try and just exchange blows. And then David walks up and he's got his sling. And basically David is saying, no, I'm going to take this fight the way that I can look at all of my strengths and overcome all of the weaknesses that you're giving me right now. And it's quite well written, and it really kind of gives a lot of different examples of how David and Goliath is basically just a misunderstanding and misinterpretation of what the actual event in a part of what the problem is, and using that as a strength would be the best way, I would say, to try and overcome that.
That's Malcolm Gladwell wrote that book.
Yeah,
I read it too. It's very good. A woman asked me, she had been reading Mental Training like a PDF, something online, and it was talking about imposter syndrome, which is basically you feel like you don't deserve to be where you are, to be fighting the people you're fighting, or to be getting the attention you're getting. You basically feel like you're an imposter, kind of fooling everybody, and that you don't deserve the things that you've, you know, clearly earned by doing whatever it is you do to get to where you are. How do people mentally get past notions of not deserving or not belonging where they are?
I think the biggest way I would approach that one is I would kind of look at it and just say, all right, what you want to look at there is you want to say, instead of looking at it from yourself, look at it from an external perspective. Mm-hmm. If you were telling your best friend that you didn't deserve to be here and you're not that great of a fighter, what would your best friend say? Yeah. And then basically tell those things to yourself. Mm-hmm. So kind of take your advice that you would give a friend who was saying the same thing. Because it's so much easier to externalize that stuff and kind of look at it from that perspective than it is internally to kind of approach it from that. And it's so much more personal when it's internal, whereas when you externalize it and say, okay, this is what I would say to a friend. I've even had a performer basically turn on a recorder and record himself talking to what he would say to his best friend in the same situation, and then do it over and over with different things that he was doing, and then play it back for himself, and it's him telling himself these things. Mm. And it had a profound effect because he really kind of felt like, no, these are things I deserve. And they're all things that I'm telling myself that are true. And I think that it's only my internal voice that is kind of trying to take these things away from me. But having it on a voice recorder and listening to it makes me feel very, very, you know, deserving, valid, and vulnerable. Mm.
Do you think that people have a slight shyness or fear of getting into mental training because from the outside, without actually doing it, it kind of comes off as Stuart Smalley? Especially with words like self-talk, where you're like looking in the mirror and you're like, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me. He's actually really good in his self-talk, but I think that people are afraid of looking like that or something. How do you get people to kind of let their guard down and actually be kind to themselves? Because it actually seems like people are afraid of doing so.
I got everything except the last sentence.
How do you get people to actually talk to themselves the way they would talk to a friend? Because it seems like people are afraid to talk to themselves like that. Like it comes off as, I don't know, eating your own crap or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's... you know, we have so many self-help books. We have so many people who are motivational speakers and motivational interviewers and people who will tell you that they have the right kind of ways to approach these things. And a lot of times it can come off as quite gimmicky or ingenuine. And again, it's the more familiar you are with it yourself and the more you practice it yourself, the more you realize how big a tool it can be and how much of an effect it can have on your performance. Certainly, as you were saying or alluding to in the earlier, if you sell yourself a bunch of BS, if you tell yourself a bunch of lies all day, that's really not going to have any effect. You know, it may even have the reverse effect that you want it to have. So it's making sure that when you are telling yourself these things, even if it is Stuart Smalley saying he's good enough, he's smart enough, and doggone it, people do like him. Well, if he believes those things and is genuine to himself saying them, I actually would think that that would be quite effective.
all right, so you've heard of like a couch to 5K as a phrase, right? It's like getting people to a 5K race starting from doing absolutely nothing.
Uh-huh.
What is the couch to 5K program to get people started in mental training?
Oh, wow. Excellent question. I think it's... So let's say it's reflecting back to the breathing. It's understanding that I'm not going to teach you anything new. I'm not going to teach you anything you don't know, whether it's mental training for yourself, whether you're going to see a coach or a sports psychologist. They're not going to tell you anything so profoundly new that you're going to be like, my goodness, now I can go run a 5K. What they're going to do is they're going to help you understand that, that there are things that you can do that will make you better. And those things are things that you need to approach piece by piece, step by step. And it's not just a, oh, breathe. Oh, good. Now I'm better. It's going to be something that you really have to get comfortable with. You have to do trial and error. You have to look into those things. So if I think it's the couch to the 5K, I think the first thing you have to become aware of is you have to become aware of how much of an influence mental skills have on everything that you do. And letting yourself know that it's not going to be something where it's profoundly different. It's just going to be taking the steps that are known that will get.
All right, you froze just at the last second there. So you're saying it's the couch to 5K is taking the necessary steps that you know will get you to where you want to go. If you don't have